This podcast was recorded at Hartford Street Zen Center, Isanji, in San Francisco. Please help support our temple by making a donation at hscc.org.
Okay, we'll just try to speak up. So, good morning. I think that most people here know that I earlier on this year was on a walking pilgrimage, cross-country pilgrimage, that made it as far as eastern Colorado, where I was forced to suspend the journey because of a medical event. And I'm planning to continue this journey in the spring. So this talk is kind of my way of attempting to keep pilgrimage consciousness or pilgrimage mind alive while I'm not walking. And somebody asked me last week if I was nervous, and I said no, and I find I'm nervous after all. So, anyway, I would like to begin by presumptuously reading this koan from the Book of Serenity. And I know it's going to be kind of obvious, but never mind. And apologies for my pronunciation of the names, too. Maybe somebody could correct me if I go wrong. So this is a conversation between two characters by the name of Dizong and Fayang. Near enough, okay. Dizong asked Fayang, "Where are you going?" Fayang said, "Around on pilgrimage." Dizong said, "What is the purpose of pilgrimage?" Fayang said, "I don't know." Dizong said, "Not knowing is nearest." And in some some translations, that it's not knowing is most intimate. I was going to read a little bit of the commentary. I don't know how relevant that is. But I will. Yang Wuwei asked Master Furong, "How long has it been since we last met?" Furong said, 7 years. Mr. Yang said, "Have you been studying the way, engrossed in meditation?" Furong said, "I don't play that fife and drum." Mr. Yang said, "Then you wander for nothing over mountains and rivers, incapable of anything." Furong said, "Well, we haven't been apart for long. You can sure reflect on high." Mr. Yang laughed aloud. Nanshuan said, "The way is not in knowing or in not knowing. Knowing is false consciousness. Not knowing is indifference. Now, when people hear it said that not knowing is nearest, and that this is where Fayang was enlightened, they immediately go over to just not knowing, not understanding that just this is it. They hardly realize that a phrase of the ancients covers everywhere, like the sky, supports everywhere, like the earth." Okay. So, So, I think that my first question is, what is the difference between everyday life and pilgrimage? In many senses, everyday life is a pilgrimage on the planet, it seems to me. Sometimes without the intention being there, but sometimes we make a point of observing the journey. Then some of us make particular journeys for various reasons, religious, philosophical, or personal. Although I was a pilgrim also on the Camino of Santiago in Spain, and I met people on that route who were trying to fulfill a physical fitness challenge. But most formal pilgrimages are either for philosophical or spiritual reasons. And they generally include the willingness to study the events and behavior, study the events in our lives and our own behaviors, and with openness and awareness of our judgments and preferences. A life of intentional practice, whatever that means to us, is already a pilgrimage in some ways. Now, in my own history, I noticed very early on that I was very engaged when I was traveling. I seemed to feel a heightened sense of a heightened intuitiveness, a heightened openness, and of course a heightened attention, because when we travel, we can't take things for granted, and traveling requires extra attention. So, let us just say that I've always been that travel has, for most of my life, been my drug of choice. And travel as a tourist, out of curiosity for, about other parts of the world, began to feel a little bit unsatisfying and voyeuristic when I began to travel in places where there was a lot of economic disparity between where I was and where I had come from. I would ask myself if the people I was visiting could afford to come and visit me where I lived, and it felt unfair to me somehow, or it felt as if I was exploiting somehow. This was the case when I visited India, and so in India it was very important to me to think of myself as a pilgrim rather than a tourist. However, to people living in India, of course, I was a Western tourist. My sense of wanting to be a pilgrim was for myself. Good choice of a class, Larry. Well, as I said, I had the opportunity to walk on the Camino Santiago in Spain a few years ago, and that was my first real walking pilgrimage experience, and it was very life-changing. So that when in more recent years, when I began to plan this cross-country walking trip across the states, I felt that I had at least some idea of what I might be getting into. Of course, this trip was very different. I'm happy to talk about the actual trip itself at some point, maybe in a few minutes. But I wanted to just emphasize that this was kind of the personal and the political merging together in my intention for this trip, so that when it said that not knowing is nearest, I think that I have, rather than becoming less, well, let's see, more not knowing about my intention, I've actually become more, you know, purposeful, which maybe is going in the wrong direction. This trip, this last trip, was for the purpose of talking to people about environment, and it was also personal for myself, feeling a need to pay respect to the earth, because I truly believe that we are killing it and that we don't have very much hope of turning that around. So out of a sense of desperation and not knowing, well, what can I do besides sign petitions and go to demonstrations and do stuff like that, I just kind of came to a conclusion that had attracted me for many years anyway, which was to just walk. So I started out on the west coast of California near San Luis Obispo in a town called Avila Beach, and made my way over a period of months to eastern Colorado. And this was a very different sort of a trip. And since unlike the route in Spain, there are no facilities set up for pilgrims. The Camino Santiago has been a pilgrimage route for over 1,000 years, and so that there are numerous pilgrim shelters and hostels and restaurants and shops, and everything is all set up to serve people either walking or biking across Spain, and actually coming from many parts of Europe. There are lots of different variations on that route. So walking across the states, it was a little bit more challenging in that the route and the logistics and everything had to be planned and kind of encountered in a different sort of a way. I have learned so far much more than I ever would have anticipated. One thing that is a common denominator is that I feel that a pilgrimage is characterized by challenge, and every time there's a choice or a challenge, it becomes a question of, well, am I meant to try harder, or am I meant to take an alternate path or an alternate something, plan, make an alternate plan. This was the case every single day. Another thing that I think that characterizes a pilgrimage is, well, there are a couple of things, and one of them is a willingness to be guided and to listen to some kind of internal voice or internal wisdom. You might call it intuition, or sometimes you might call it grace. But this was really an ongoing lesson for me. And I was constantly amazed. I was amazed at how kind people were. And the more that I realized that, the more open I was able to be in most of the time. Another obvious practice is the letting go practice, which is, you know, I will be eternally grateful to certain tenets of Buddhism, one of which is the transitory nature of everything, because I could really watch my own attachments and my own process of letting go, attempting to let go of attachments in just day-to-day events. I might have ended up in a place to spend the night that felt very comfortable, and then in the morning it was time to wake up and pack up and leave. And I found a certain wistfulness about leaving even places that weren't so comfortable just because they were familiar. I learned how to ask for help and how to relate to people in a way that's different from the way that I relate to people when I'm at home and everything is familiar. And connected with learning to be open and learning to relate differently with people was just a few more steps along in my gratitude practice. One of the things that I found helpful was to incorporate some sort of ritual, which I did upon leaving places. Every time I would depart from one place, I would conduct kind of a gratitude ritual, and which involved burning sage and involving other people that were there if that seemed appropriate. And then also in just walking, which was a meditation in itself, I engaged in a lot of chanting. As a matter of fact, probably I have logged, I can't even imagine how many hours of chanting I have logged at this point. I don't know whether that's beneficial or not. But at any rate, in this journey for me, some unexpected things included the realization the re-realization that people are so much more than particular opinions or views or lifestyles. And one of the things that I learned that I needed to let go of was any sort of rules I had tried to set for myself. Rules about whether I would ever take a ride, what kind of food I would eat, that sort of thing. I just learned that all had to fall away, and that I needed to be just ready to meet whatever arose on any given day, at any given moment. And I think that I have a blog, and I think that I wrote excuse me, somewhere on the mission statement of my blog, I think I wrote that while it would be possible to make this kind of a trip and talk to people about environment and set out on a personal quest of my own at the same time, while it would be possible to do all this by car or by bicycle, that I felt that a person on foot would stand a better chance of being present. I was wrong. And just insofar as I could see myself preoccupied a lot of the time with where was I going to sleep? Where was I going to be in 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 hours? Would there be studying maps, would there be a place that had a store? And there were times when I would notice these preoccupations and then just have to tell myself to be quiet and just listen to the birds and the traffic because I was walking on the road. And so walking has not made me a different person so far, but I have learned quite a few things that I'm grateful to have learned. And although I probably have a little bit of a kind of head start on the next phase of my trip, I am still intimidated, partly because I have a little foreknowledge of some of the challenges. So by reading this verse to this koan. This verse doesn't have anything to do with anything I have just said, but it's kind of thought-provoking. Now, having studied to the full, it's like before. Having shed entirely the finest thread, he reaches not knowing. Let it be short, let it be long, stop cutting and patching. Get along with the high, along with the low, it levels itself. That is, going along with the high, along with the low, it levels itself. The abundance or scarcity of the house is used according to the occasion. Roaming serenely in the land, he goes where his feet take him. The purpose of 10 years' pilgrimage, clearly he'd turned his back on one pair of eyebrows. Anybody has any questions?
To me, it felt remarkable, almost surreal the whole time. Because I could say to people, I have this friend, she's in her mid-60s, and she's walking across the country by herself to raise awareness about the climate change or the environment. And it's just such an unusual thing to do, you know, and worried about it. It seemed like a very brave thing to do. And I was concerned in particular about people being territorial. Know, that you would need to stay on somebody's property, you need to be involved with somebody. You said that people were very generous. How did that actually work when you just showed up and there was a person you'd never met before?
It varied a lot. Let us just say it varied a lot. And some people would be very, very engaging. Some people wanted to engage and would offer all kinds of benefits, you might say, that I was completely grateful for. Like, did I want a shower? Did I want to wash any clothes? Did I want to, you know? Sometimes did I want to come in? And then there were also times when people were okay, you can stay on the lawn, and then they would go in the house and close the door, and I would never see them again. And that happened on my last couple of nights when I was actually getting sick. So I probably brought a less kind of engaging presence myself to those situations, but it did vary a lot, and for the most part, people were amazing. So. And you know, people fed me, and I ate food that I would never have thought of eating in my normal life, and digested it too. So. Also learned that people who collect and use guns are also concerned about environment, and that was kind of, it didn't compute with me at first, because I made the association that some radical conservative views could be lumped together with disregard for environment and things like that. Neil.
I have the feeling that your coziness with not knowing has increased following these experiences of pilgrimage. If you don't mind, could you say a little bit about how that may have changed for you?
Okay. I think, you know, the question in this koan about what is the purpose of pilgrimage, as I said a little bit ago, I grew more purposeful about my reasons for wanting to walk. However, the actual day-to-day experience of not knowing, I don't know whether that feels cozier, whether I feel cozier with that or not. I think it really depended on how willing I felt to be guided. If I felt kind of, well, there. Has anybody heard of Tosha Silver? She's kind of a non-denominational sort of. Anyway, she writes books on spirituality as being, you know, just our connection to the divine in whatever way it happens, and what we call letting go is just kind of turning it over to the divine or whatever. I've got a friend who's a big fan of hers, and I've read her book, which I found interesting. But to the extent that I felt able to just turn it over, just kind of like, let it just be whatever it was, is, then the not knowing is part of that, and then I found that I was just more able to. I guess meet situations as they arose, and sometimes I felt very crabby about the way things were going, and that was a part of it too. But I think that maybe one of the quintessential moments that kind of illustrates my sense of being looked after in all ways was walking along, and I was headed toward an exit because I was going to go to Kernville, actually. people had told me about this town, and I was determined I was going to see this town. And so I was headed toward that exit, and I was very thirsty. And I never drink Coca-Cola, but in this case, I was really, except for if I'm sick. That's the only time I ever drink Coca-Cola. But I was, in this, at this point, Coca-Cola was sounding so good to me. I just really, there was a gas station, and I thought, I'm going to head to that gas station, and I'm going to buy a soda. Anyway, about a mile from that exit, or half a mile, a car pulled over, a guy jumped out of the car, and he had all the stuff in his hands, and he ran back, and he handed me two cans of Coke and a big thing of water. And I thanked him very much. I said, I don't need more than one Coca-Cola right now, because, for one thing, I didn't want to carry so much, and I didn't want to have to dispose of so many cans and bottles. But I was just so blown away, and he just talked to me while I drank my Coca-Cola, and then he and his girlfriend turned around in their car and left.
It's the real thing.
So did you have any kind of signage or way of letting people know what you were about?
I had a flag. It was designed by one of the 350.org local groups, and it hasn't gone viral, so nobody recognizes it. But it was good for visibility, and it was also good for conversation when people say, what's that flag about? I did not have a backpack. I had a walking trailer, so you know I wasn't stumbling under this load of. Yeah, I mean it's my stuff isn't so heavy except for the food and the water. That becomes really heavy, and so this trailer was designed in Holland and designed for exactly what I'm doing, and so I was flying the flag from the frame of that trailer, and it was that people did ask what it was about, and there was only one incident where somebody asked me very confrontationally, what's that supposed to be? And I feel that this person was probably drunk, so yeah. Felt a little threatening, but this was right outside of Denver, and, in kind of a very seedy stretch of the road.
So did you sleep under the stars some nights in a tent, or were you always in a roof, under a roof?
No, I slept outside. I have camping gear, and I either slept outside or sometimes I slept in motels. Sometimes I got invited to stay in people's houses, or other types of shelters. And but I saw surprisingly few stars. It was really amazing that the weather. It was often, I ran into a lot of weather. It was cloudy and it rained a lot, and I dodged some of that by postponing departures or making alternate plans. And then my tent had a rain fly also, so if I wanted to see stars, I had to go outside.
Spoke about when maybe a difficult situation would arise and you would wonder, well, should I try harder or should I take a different tack, route, whatever. So would you say that you responded one way or the other depending on whatever circumstances were, how you felt at the moment, so on and so forth? Or did you tend to go one way or the other?
It was just random. Yeah, I mean, it felt random, or sometimes I would kind of go back to that kind of what is my guidance telling me right now sort of thing. And that was what helped me decide to end the trip when I did, because, well, my body also told me, but once I had discovered what the problem was and was taking steps to, to kind of heal and get back to normal, it was a matter of, well, should I rest right here in this town of Fort Morgan, Colorado, where there's absolutely nothing, how long will it take? How long will I have to rest? Maybe I should just go back home for now, and then that's what I eventually decided to do. But that was kind of a painful decision, because it was sort of unsatisfying, and especially so because once I had decided to come home, there wasn't a train that I could get on for a few days, and so there I was in Fort Morgan, Colorado, where in the heart of agribusiness America, where the biggest thing in town was the sugar beet factory, which could be heard all night long. And I mean, even from inside, it could, it just had this rumbly hum that was, you could hear it all night long. It was kind of amazing. But I rented a bicycle and took a bike right along a river and went to a small museum, and then I think I had exhausted all of the possibilities of the town, and within a couple of days, so there was nothing to be done but to feel kind of defeated and wait for the train. So, but I think that was the right decision.
Not like maybe it was sort of like life.
Yeah, exactly. Like
sometimes you get what you want, sometimes you don't, sometimes you're disappointed, sometimes there's joy, whatever.
Well, and that's one of the things that was very obvious to me in all of the traveling that I've done in the past, is that if you're on vacation, it all happens very quickly. It happens within a week or two. But if you're traveling for months at a time, then it becomes sort of like it's just life, It's not it's just kind of meeting all of the kind of normal things that you would meet if you were at home, pretty much. I mean, obviously, you have to pay more attention to simple things like wash your clothes, but other things like, as you said, the disappointments and happy surprises, or just like day-to-day life. But I don't have to walk by myself. I'm more than open to company. So if anybody wants to join a part of this walk, it's there are a lot of miles left to it.
Start where you left off.
I'm not going to start at the beginning again. I tried to tally my mileage and to kind of count up the number of days I camped, and I think that it was really hard to count the mileage because some places it didn't show on the map, and I just had to try and estimate. But I think that it's somewhere at this point between 1,000 and 1,100 miles. And at 1,500 should be the halfway point, but I don't have that many I don't have another 400 to go before I am halfway, so that just says that there are a couple of stretches there where I did take transportation. I accepted a ride or something. And so somewhere in the middle of Nebraska, I think, will be about halfway.
Get yourself a pedometer.
Those are not, I have one, and those are not all that accurate.
Oh, okay.
I was wondering what you meant when you said that you discovered people were kinder. And I wondered whether it was in the direction of something in the dynamics made them kinder, or you discovered that they actually were more kind, not just in the dynamics with you, or what kind of kindness did you discover?
Well, I would not be able to probably say whether it was due to the dynamics or not, but I think I just meant that when you get your impressions of people through the media, then you have a very kind of a black and white sort of a sense of what people are like. And so, you know, just reminding myself, oh yeah, people are a lot more than just political conservatives or bleeding heart liberals like me, or vegetarians or carnivores or whatever. And I got into a lot of very interesting discussion with people. And
did you take notes? You got another book?
Oh, I have a journal and a blog. The blog has is not all
copious.
That all that deep, all that detail.
So was your Buddhism in evidence? Would people know, or would you talk about it that much, or do you
no,
more focus
really.
On the environment and not mixed messages?
You know, it would come up on occasion, but you know, but really, I was just this person out there walking, and I didn't choose to identify as, you know, anything in particular. So somebody I remember asked if I was going to wear robes while I was walking, and I tried to imagine the whole trip, you know, and the logistics and everything, and wearing robes. And it had to come down to just the practical. And also sometimes even when I was talking to people, I didn't talk about environment. So sometimes it would come up if people asked, and sometimes I would bring it up, but it didn't always come up. And I mean, sometimes I chose to express my intention in terms of just paying respect to the land rather than like worrying about that we're destroying the planet. And, you know, sometimes then that would be kind of more of a, more relevant to the conversation we were having.
Yeah, to keep an, you know, to have an upbeat message, you know, in the face of the realization that you stated earlier on that, you know, things seem to be on a, you know, bad course. You know, people often don't want to hear that. I mean, was there, you know, much discussion about that, or did you try to keep it keep away from that?
Like I said, it was kind of random. One example is that, you know, when it did come up that I was expressing my concern for climate, and the person said, "Oh, I don't believe in all that talk about the climate." And I said, "Well, you know, you don't have to." I said, "It's my concern that I'm out here expressing. You know, that's what I'm doing." And then there was a car, a truck that pulled over one time that wanted to find out what I was doing, and these people didn't hold a view similar to mine, but the guy said that he said I don't know about all this climate stuff, but he said, since you're out here walking like this, you can say what you want and I'll listen. So I thought, okay.
Yeah.
So I thought that was interesting.
That was really interesting.
Do you want me to stop? Shall I stop?
Well, we have a little ceremony to do.
Yes, we do.
I just want to thank you for your pilgrimage practice.
Well, you're welcome.